Awesome. It's great. Well, today we're finishing off a series that we've been doing, a four-week series called Rebellion, the Great Rejection. And we have a, you know, it's a bit of a negative title, I suppose. But really what we're trying to do is we're trying to explain what the problem is. You need to know what the problem is so that you can get the correct answer. I keep on making this point. You know, if I'm having arterial bleeding from my jugular, that's a bad problem, right? It's going to kill me. I'll probably be dead in about 90 seconds, 2 minutes tops, right? I'm bleeding out. And someone says, oh, Ken, you've got a headache here. Have a Panadol. That's not going to help me, right? So the real problem is that I'm bleeding from my jugular vein. Is it a carotid artery? I don't know. No, that's somewhere else. But I'm bleeding from this artery. And someone gives me a Panadol for a headache, I might also have a headache, right? I might also have a headache. It's actually not going to solve my issue. So we live in a broken world. This world is not the way it should be. And sometimes we think that the problem is I haven't got enough money. Sometimes we think the problem is I'm not in the right relationship, or I'm in the wrong relationship, or my boss doesn't appreciate me, or all sorts, you know, if I had a bad hair day, or I didn't get enough sleep last night. Sometimes all those can be issues, of course. Don't want to make light of that, but there's a deeper issue. There's a deeper problem. The deeper problem is that we have rejected our rightful ruler, our king. We've rejected our creator. So we've got the slides there. It's not quite, they're on the way. First one says, the bad news for humanity is that we have rejected our creator. That's the bad news. That's the root problem. We've rejected the one who made us. And who likes to be rejected? Anyone? You know, my first girlfriend, she rejected me. She dropped me. There was another girl in university. I told her that I liked and she knocked me back and that was rejected. I mean, I felt bad about that. I felt, you know, no one wants to be rejected, right? Rejection doesn't feel good. Rejection has consequences. No one likes to be rejected. There are consequences that come with rejection. And what we have done as human beings is we have rejected our creator. We've rejected God. We've rejected God by eating the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That was all about cutting ourselves off from God. So when we looked at the human rebellion, Adam and Eve, they were meant to be in relationship with God. They were meant to learn the difference between good and evil by being close to God, by walking closely with Him. Instead, they wanted to take a shortcut. Has anyone ever been tempted to take a shortcut in your life before? You thought, all I've got to do, you know, what I'll do is I'll just cram for my study at the last minute. I'll take a shortcut. You know, there's consequences for taking shortcuts. You know, sometimes we can get away with it every now and then, but really, we're called to do things the correct way. And the correct way of knowing, of growing into who we were meant to be as human beings, as image bearers of God, was to be in relationship with Him. And so we said, no, we don't want a relationship with you. We want to take a shortcut. We rejected God. We said to God, we don't want to learn from you. We want to be independent and learn from ourselves. We cut ourselves off from God. We cut ourselves off from who He is. So who is God? Who is this God that you're talking about? Well, in Exodus 34, God, Yahweh, he describes who He is. This is what He says, the Lord, the Lord. And that's actually His personal name. It's translated the Lord in English. It's actually Yahweh, Yahweh, Yahweh. Or to translate it literally is I am, I am. That's His name. God calls Himself I Am. In Hebrew, it's Yahweh. This is His name. He is compassionate. He's gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. So He's talking about His character, His nature. Who is God? He is the God whose nature is compassionate, whose nature is gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands. And guess what we did? We cut ourselves off from the compassionate, gracious, slow to God, abounding in love and faithfulness God. That's who we cut ourselves off from. There's consequences, okay? We rejected that. Who would reject that? Us. I mean, but it's kind of crazy, right? It's kind of sounds ridiculous. It's almost like a comedy, a tragic comedy that we cut ourselves off from the one who defines what compassion and grace and being slow, patience, abounding in love and faithfulness. And there's other consequences, because he's that is His nature, but this is another part of His nature, is that he's forgiving of the wickedness, He forgives wickedness and rebellion and sin, but He does not leave the guilty unpunished. We've exposed ourselves as human beings and creation. We've exposed ourselves to God's justice. He won't let the guilt of the wicked go unpunished. There's, when you rebel, if you rebel against a human government, what will they do? If I was to storm Parliament House in Canberra, and this is a theoretical, hypothetical situation, just in case the Defence Signals Directorate is listening to us right now. This is completely, I have no intention of doing this, full disclaimer. But if, theoretically, I was to storm Parliament House with, you know, an assault rifle, right, and say, you know what, Scott Morrison, I don't like the way you treated Malcolm Turnbull, and so I'm going to rebel against you. I'm going to show you that I mean business. What would they do to me? They would shoot me dead, right? That's what they would do. That's what natural human governments do to people who rebel against them. Because it's the right thing to do, right? A just authority is being rebelled against. And so when God, he will not leave the guilty go unpunished either. So we've rejected God. We've rejected our Creator. But we've also rejected God's mission. We looked about this last week when we looked at the Tower of Babel. And we think it's a great story of where languages come from, or we think it's a great story about unity. It's actually a great story about the unity of human beings in rebellion against God. Rejecting him, we've rejected God, and then we've also rejected his mission. He created us to represent him to the rest of the world. Why do human beings have worth? Whether they are rich or poor, you know, subjectively good looking or subjectively not good looking, or whether they have, you know, they're Olympic athletes, or they have, learning difficulties, or have physical impairments. Why does every single human being, a newborn baby, or the president of the United States, why are they equal in value? Because they carry the image of God, the image bearers of God. And what we said was, we don't want to do that anymore. We don't want to represent you, God, to the rest of creation. We don't want the stars to look at us, the galaxies. We don't want the trees, the elephants, the mosquitoes. We don't want them to look at us and think of you anymore. We want to make a name for ourselves. And so that's what they did. The building of the Tower of Babel says, let us build a tower so we can make a name for ourselves. Let us gather here so that we won't be scattered. What was the first rule? What was the first mission God gave to human beings? Fill the whole earth. And humanity in unity shook their fist to God and said, no, we won't fill the whole earth. We will stay right here. And how do I know that's the condition of humanity? Because when I tell my kids to do what I want them to do, they say, no, Dad, I'm going to stay right here. Human beings have been doing it. Been getting better and better at rebelling against God. God has always been rejected by his people. Always. You know what God does? He has a plan. He has a plan for the nations. And I kind of looked at how the garden, the rebellion in the garden was undone by Jesus' obedience in the Garden of Gethsemane. Not my will, but your will be done. I looked at how the Tower of Babel was undone by God sending his Spirit at Pentecost, where there was languages and the nations once again. And instead of being, of kind of shaking their fists in defiance like a Babel, they were empowered to represent God and to fulfill the mission to all the nations. And so here we are, you know, as almost as far away as you can get from Jerusalem, loving Jesus, loving God, stepping out in the mission that he's got for us because of what God did at Pentecost. He undid Babel. So God has always, that was in Genesis chapter 11. In Genesis chapter 12, he chooses Abraham to be a father of many nations, and who will be blessed and be a blessing to the nations. So God chooses a people. He chooses Israel, not because he says, I want to just have a favorite. No, I'm choosing you so that I can empower you to be a blessing to the rest of the world. I want you to know me so you can make me known to the rest of the world. God chooses Israel to be his own special people, his treasured possession, and they reject him. You know, they even reject, I was reading about this in the Bible just recently, they even reject God's promise. They get taken out of Egypt from slavery. God has a promised land for them, and they're right there. They've traveled, you know, a month or so, a few days to get to the edge of the promised land. And then they say, no, we can't do it. We're not going to go in. They reject God's promise. And as I was listening to it, I thought, wow, how many of us are like that? How many of us as Christians can be on the very edge of what God has in store for us? And because of these seeming obstacles, we go, no, I'm not going to do it. And then we go 40 years in the wilderness, rejecting God's promise. And the Bible actually uses the term, they rebelled against God. Rejecting God's promise is equivalent to rebellion. It uses the word rebellion. They rebelled when they asked, they rebelled against God again because they wanted a human king. They had God as king, God who had delivered them personally through his agent Moses from Egypt. And they said, you know what, we want to be like the other nations. We want a human king. They had a prophet at the time. His name was Samuel. And he was kind of like, oh, he's feeling down. And God was saying to him, don't worry, Samuel. They're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me. My people are good at rejecting me. And they rejected. They rejected God. They wanted to be like the nations. It's like if my kids, I always talk about what I try to tell my children who we are as Johnstons. We serve and encourage. And I was like, you know what, Dad? I want to have another dad. I want to have someone else who wants to give me a different identity. I want someone else to be in charge of me. And so I want you to give me, I want to go find someone else. Maybe someone tall and good looking, you know, unlike you, Dad, you know. And so they rebelled when they asked, because they wanted to be like the nations. Here's the thing. They were given a mission to bless the nations and to transform them and to make the nations around them more prosperous and to be in relationship with God. And so that means that they've got issues. The nations around them got issues. And Israel's got the answer to those issues. And then what they decide to do is to say, no, we want to be like these nations that have issues, even though we've got answers for those issues. How many of us are like that? Oh, I want to be like my non-Christian friend at work who's getting promoted because of, you know, all the shady stuff that they're doing. Or I want to be like, my friend from university who is pursuing ungodly relationships because, you know, even though I have the answer for that person, I'm the one that can tell them what they really need. Actually, I want to follow in their footsteps because they look like they've got it together. Have you ever done that? Daniel has. We'll pray for you, Daniel, afterwards. Man, sorry. No, I mean, I've done that. We've all done that, right? We've all looked at people who don't know Jesus and think, I want to be like them. I want to have that kind of relationship. I want to have that kind of money. I want to have that kind of career. I want to have all that stuff. And while losing sight of the fact that we are the answer to their deep issues that they have. But what does God do? God used their rejection to bring a true king. Don't worry, Samuel. They're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me. I'll give them a king. I'll give them what they asked for. And, it won't work out. It didn't work out with Saul. And God used the rejection to bring a true king. Oh, yeah, that's right, king. He gave them David. He gave them Solomon. Well, you know, do you know David and Solomon? If you look at what a king should do, read the book of Deuteronomy. It's only like 32 chapters. The book of Deuteronomy says what a king should do, a good king should do. David and Saul do the exact opposite. We think of David as a great king. He breaks the law of the king over and over and over again. Solomon does exactly the same thing. You know, we read about all these achievements that they do, building, getting chariots. Solomon got all these chariots. Wow, what a great leader. What a great military leader for Israel. In Deuteronomy, it says, if you are the king, make sure that you do not have any chariots. You will rely on me to look after you, not on military technology. So God used their rejection to bring a true king, but it wasn't David and Solomon. Those guys, they broke the law that was specific for a king over and over again. That's the pattern, right? It just gets worse. David and Solomon, they were good kings. If you look in reference to everyone else that came after them, they were bad kings if you look in reference to God's standard. And so God did use their rejection, though, to bring a true king. It's not quite Christmas. Although if you were in the Philippines, it would be Christmas because it's September. But this is a Christmas verse, obviously. You'd notice Isaiah chapter 9. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. The government will be on his shoulders. He will rule, he will reign. A child will be born. Who is this child? Well, it's Jesus. Jesus Christ. What does Christ mean? Christ means anointed. It's just the Greek word for the Hebrew word Messiah. Jesus Christ. Anointed what? Anointed dude, anointed carpenter? No, it's the anointed king. Jesus Christ means Jesus the King. A virgin gave birth to a baby, and he shall be called Wonderful, Emmanuel, God with us. This king was anointed by a prophet. Do you know how many kings were anointed by a prophet in Israel's history? I think it was three. Saul, David, and then Jesus. Who was the prophet that anointed Saul and David? Samuel. Who was the prophet that anointed Jesus? John the Baptist. He was anointed because he is the anointed king. This king was anointed by a prophet, the first since David, to be set aside according to the precepts of God's law. He entered triumphantly into the royal city. Jesus, he came triumphantly into Jerusalem as a king, as a humble king, not lording it over him. He came riding on a donkey, right? Not the most impressive of animals. You know, Caesar would have come in after defeating Jerusalem. He would have come in and stallions drawing his chariot and surrounded by the Roman legions. And he would have come into Jerusalem that way. Jesus, the true king, comes in on a donkey. I love it. Humble, relatable, not using his power to self-aggrandize, using his power to empower others. So he comes in to the royal city, but once again, he's rejected. The true king was truly rejected. Like, emphatically, you know, with exclamation points. We reject you. Isaiah 53, verse 2. This is speaking of Jesus. He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. He was on a donkey, not pulled by stallions in a chariot. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, rejected by humanity. I mean, why not? He'd always been rejected over and over again. A man of suffering and familiar with pain, like one from whom people hide their faces. He was despised and we held him in low esteem. Oh, this is the root problem of the world, is that we have rejected the true king, hidden our faces from him. Oh, he didn't come the way we thought he should be. Doesn't look like leadership should look. Doesn't build himself grand palaces, but he serves people and he touches the ones, the lepers, to see them healed. And he spends time with prostitutes, telling them that they're loved and accepted, and empowers them to change who they are. The leaders of Israel were given a choice. They were given a choice. Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor of the time, said, you know, it's my tradition to kind of release to you a prisoner. Do you want me to release to you Jesus, who's done nothing wrong? Or do you want me to release to you this guy, Barabbas, who has actually murdered people, and was a real rebel. He actually had murdered people in rebellion against Caesar. So this was a legitimate rebel. And they rejected Jesus and chose the rebel Barabbas, who had murdered people. They rejected their king and chose the murderer. Here's the irony. The irony is that Jesus was still enthroned. You know, John, if you look at the Gospels, there's four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You know, and Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they kind of all, they're very similar, lots of similar source materials. Some parts are, you know, almost verbatim. You can tell that they've done their research and they've shared. Anyone that ever done group projects and kind of shared your research? That's kind of what's happened with Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They've done that. John just comes in and he's all philosophical and artsy, and he goes his own way. And he talks about Jesus' enthronement as king, but he does it in a way that's subversive and different and powerful, I think. John tells the story of Jesus' ascension to glory, and it's got nothing at all to do with heaven. Nothing. So John is kind of, the Gospel of John is divided into two kind of sections. The Book of Signs, like chapters 1 to 11. The Book of Glory, chapters 12 to 21. And so the Book of Glory is all about glory, right? Glory. What's the glory? What is the glory? What is the glory that is so powerful? That the whole book is pointing towards. It's Jesus' crucifixion. It's his enthronement, not on a throne, but on a cross. John tells the story of Jesus' ascension to glory, and it's got nothing to do with heaven. Jesus is clothed in royal garments. At his trial, he is clothed in royal garments. Robes of purple put on him. That's what kings wear. He's given a crown. Royal garments, a royal cloak, color purple, and he's given a crown. It happens to be a crown of thorns, but he's given a crown. He is lifted high above others. Jesus said, if the Son of Man is lifted high, he will draw all others, he will draw all humans to him. And that's what happens. He ascends his throne, and that throne is a cross. And all of this was done mockingly, the royal garments, the throne, people bowing down to him, mocking him, all that kind of stuff. But it was truly his enthronement. You know why? Because Jesus embraced his rejection. He embraced his rejection because it's in God's nature to forgive rebellion. Going back to who God says he is in Exodus 34, he forgives rebellion. He won't let the wicked go unpunished, but he will forgive rebellion if we will acknowledge what he's done for us and say, Jesus, you truly are the King. And according to the Gospel of John, you weren't enthroned in a throne, but on a cross. They were mocking you, but you embraced that rejection because I rejected you. And the only way for me to be back in relationship with you is to pay a price I couldn't pay. So John tells a story of Jesus' ascension to glory. Jesus is clothed in royal garments. A crown is placed on his head. He's lifted high and a sign is placed above him. What does that sign say? Jesus. Here's Jesus, the King of the Jews. Three different languages it's written. It was all done mockingly, but it was true. Israel had finally done it. Good job, Israel. They'd finally done it. They had their promised king and they got him by crucifying him. Maybe Mel, do you mind just jumping up? Where's Mel, Jim, Keys? Just kind of background, chord progression. 1625. The Great Rejection. This is what the series has been subtitled, Rebellion, the Great Rejection. Not only the Great Rejection, it's the comprehensive rejection. Comprehensive rejection, even by the people that God had chosen to be bearers of his good news, to be bearers of his nature and his character to the nations around him. Rejected by those who we walked so closely with, Adam and Eve, the first humans. Just perfect relationship. You know, there was room to grow. There was things to learn. There was a journey to go on. It was the honeymoon, right? But humans rejected God. The great rejection, the comprehensive rejection. This is our root problem. But it's the rejection that Jesus, our King, embraced. His kingdom is different to our kingdom, to our notions of rule. The way he rules is different to the way humans rule. It's more true. It's more real. Because he's the true human, the real human, the archetypal human. His kingdom is different. Its values are different. Its power is different. The way Jesus wins is different. How does Jesus win? By losing. How is he enthroned? By dying. Just the beauty, the poetry, the juxtaposition, the way Jesus wins is different. Let me ask you this question. What other king dies to save the lives of those who have rebelled against him? You know, you got stories of good leaders who give their lives for their men at different times, yes? How many stories are there of those who have given their lives for the men who have rebelled against them? What other king dies to save the lives of those who have rebelled against him? None. Jesus alone. Jesus alone is worthy of our allegiance. Who will you follow as your king today? We follow someone or something, some concept, some ideology, some goal. Something rules us and says to us what we will do and what we will don't do. What we will sacrifice for, what we will live for, what we will die for. Who is your king? Coming to church doesn't make Jesus your king automatically. Did you know that? It doesn't. It's coming. Wow, you've come to church. I mean, thank you. Of course, thank you for coming to church, guys. Jesus alone is worthy of our allegiance. Jesus alone is worthy of our worship. Jesus alone is worthy of our lives. You know, we rejected the King. We rejected the King. We rejected the King, and he allowed our rejection to become the means of our healing. We rejected the King, He said, you know, I'm going to use this. I'm going to turn it around. Just like I turned around one garden to another. Just like I turned around one episode of the languages and nations. I'm going to turn that around. I'm going to turn around your rejection of me by using it as the very means to bring reconciliation between us. I love that. I love my King. You know what? And I love the family that my King is building. Here we are, nations of the world.